Our guest this morning is a he deals with Chapter 11 business reorganizations. This is a show that when I found out he was coming on and what we were talking about, I was very excited. I think it's a very intriguing topic. He is attorney Miles Alderman. Miles, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
How's how are things?
Things are good, considering. I mean, we're all dealing with the same issues, but the weather's good for December. Mm-hmm. Things are relatively good.
Good.
Thank you.
Has your experience representing Connecticut businesses in workouts and business restructuring influenced your thinking about healthcare insurance? And if so, how, really?
Yeah, it really has. Absolutely. And from an early point, at about the time that Steve was working on making the HSA accounts a reality for many businesses, I was working with businesses that were struggling. People may remember the early 90s were a particularly tough time in Connecticut for a lot of businesses. I had started doing restructuring work in the 80s. And in the early 90s, there was a company in Connecticut. They'd spent years printing manuals in the books that we used to get when you buy a new computer or a laptop or a printer.
Mm-hmm.
You might remember that it would come with a book in there to show you what to do.
Yep.
And early 90s, I think it was 93, Adobe comes out with PDF, and all of a sudden computers are shipping with electronic versions of their manuals. And one of the companies that was hard hit was a local company in Connecticut that had made manuals for IBM and other major companies. They couldn't continue to operate. They were going to shut down. And the bank was going to liquidate the equipment. And it had been a family printer for decades in Connecticut. And the family was so upset about what was going to happen to the employees, and particularly what was going to happen with their health insurance, because company wouldn't exist. COBRA is a fine concept, but if your employees don't have a paycheck, how do they even pay?
That's right.
Premium?
That's right. People forget that, but go ahead. Yep, you're right.
The right to buy insurance doesn't help you if you don't have the money to buy insurance. And we looked at that situation, and the family that owned the company was so upset, they couldn't imagine how to even tell their employees they were shutting down. And I was relatively young, and I remember painfully standing on a large wooden crate in the middle of an old industrial building that had been used for many decades with 100-and-something employees around me, telling these people that their jobs were ending.
Mm.
And it seemed like an eternity as people came up to me one by one. And the question I kept hearing was about their health insurance. One after another, you know, my husband needs heart surgery. I need heart surgery.
Oh boy.
My daughter has cancer. My spouse has cancer. What do we do? And luckily at that point I was young and healthy, and I hadn't experienced the impact that health can have on a family and the financial impact.
Yeah.
And here I was doing business bankruptcy, but the personal side was coming through with all these employees. I will say that was an opportunity. There's a little known statute. Lawyers never deal with it. We don't really have to deal with it much. It's an old law called the Hot Goods Statute, and it was written many, many decades ago. The idea was that a company couldn't sell a product and not pay its employees for the work they did to produce it, and that if you tried to sell your product without paying your workers for their wages, they had a lien on the proceeds, and they had a right to the profit before the company got it. And companies didn't try to sell goods without paying employees, so the statute really wasn't used. And I had this idea, well, what if I tell the bank that future health insurance is an obligation with regard to a company that's been around for so long, it didn't give people warning? And what if we ask the bank to pay for the insurance just until these people get new jobs? And I met with the bank's loan officers and the bank's attorney, and the bank's attorney told the loan officers, look, he's probably going to lose at court because this law wasn't intended for health insurance. It was intended for payroll. But they said, they're going to cost us a lot of money in legal fees fighting over it. Why don't you spend that money to make the COBRA payments? And it was one of those moments where a reasonable legal argument and people who wanted to help each other got something done, and the bank ended up providing health insurance for a year for all the employees,
wow,
which allowed them to then have time to get new jobs and take care of it. But that, to me, was the moment in which I realized how fundamentally important health insurance was for employers and employees. And, you know, it's the work that, you know, people like Steve Glick have done to help with the how you finance it and how you, companies make it work, hugely important. And it became strikingly clear to me that through that process that year in, I think, 1993.
It was called the Hot Goods statute?
Hot goods as in stolen goods.
Right. Hot goods. Hot goods statute. Were there other experiences from your insolvency practice that have influenced your thinking about health insurance? I know. I mean, that was that's an incredible story. You had like an epiphany, that aha moment. Any other experiences, though, that you can share?
Yeah, I did. And the other one came in a really unexpected way. We were doing some fraud investigation for a couple major banks on, you know, big cases where somebody appears to have just borrowed millions of dollars and disappeared with it. And so we had this relationship of doing bank, you know, investigation of fraud. And one of the big credit card issuers, one of the huge banks in the country, mm-hmm, approached us because they thought they were seeing a increase in credit card fraud in Connecticut. And what triggered their concern, and this was the late 90s, they were seeing a spike in the number of people filing for bankruptcy after a huge increase in the borrowing on their credit cards, usually right up to the maximum. Yeah. And what they thought was happening was that unscrupulous lawyers were telling their clients to go max out their credit cards before they file bankruptcy, which, if that's happening, it's really bad. I mean, first, it's unethical for lawyers to do it because lawyers aren't supposed to help people commit a fraud. And it's fraudulent to borrow money with the intent of not paying it back. So the bank legitimately had a concern that they were being defrauded. And they asked us to do an investigation, and we investigated a lot of cases. I can't tell you if it was many dozens or if it was hundreds, but it was a lot of cases. And there was fraud. I would say for the one, I mean, it was a long time ago, so I can't tell you if it was 25% or 30% or 33, mm-hmm, but there was a percentage of people who really were intentionally borrowing money with the intent to not pay it back. I mean, stories like, yeah, I maxed out my credit card to buy marble because I wanted to give my neighbors new bathrooms before I filed bankruptcy. I mean, I bought my wife all this jewelry and I gave, you know, things to everybody because I knew I was filing bankruptcy. Those are pretty easy for a bank to say, that's fraudulent intent. We want you to sell the jewelry and pay us off and, you know, go after it. But what I didn't expect, what really shocked me, was how many people, and I want to say it was more than half. Now, maybe it was 45%, not 65%, but it was significantly more than the number of fraud cases, were related to health care.
Oh.
The number of people that they maxed out their credit card paying medical bills because they or a spouse or a child got sick. And sadly, a huge percentage of those were end-of-life care. They were caring for somebody who then died.
Oh, my goodness.
And that really hit me again, because if you're lucky enough to not get sick, or you're lucky enough that when you are sick, you've got good health insurance, you don't understand what happens to so many of our friends and neighbors when either they don't have insurance or the insurance doesn't cover enough for what they get hit with.
That's very true. Yeah.
It's substantial. I mean, I was blown away by the percentage of these people who, it wasn't fraud, it wasn't intent to hurt anybody, people who had worked their whole lives and done everything the way they should do it, and then for the bad luck of having gotten sick or having a loved one get sick, they get wiped out, and they do what we all would do, which is you spend what you can to care for those you love, and it goes on the credit card.
Yeah, it's true. Hey, can you differentiate when a business files Chapter 7 and when a business files Chapter 11? I know one is bankruptcy protection, but maybe if you can just differentiate those two for us.
Yeah, sure. In the simplest level, Chapter 7s are by design liquidations. So when a company files for Chapter 7, they are filing with the intent, or when an individual files Chapter 7, the intent is that the assets will be accumulated and liquidated to pay off creditors. A Chapter 11 is designed to restructure, reorganize the company. Now, so the goal in a Chapter 11 usually is to have the companies survive and to save jobs. That being said, there also are times when Chapter 11 is used not to simply reorganize, but it might be used to reorganize and sell, and maybe there's another buyer who takes over.
Okay.
Or sometimes it's an orderly liquidation where the company will shut down, but it will do it over a slower period of time and not have the proverbial fire sale of assets.
Gotcha. So, and that's really where your level of expertise comes in as far as restructuring during Chapter 11 cases.
That's what I've done the most of. When it works well, it is incredibly rewarding. It is very difficult in that if lawyers who do mergers and acquisitions, I think they get the easiest job emotionally. People come to a deal wanting to do an acquisition. They're excited. They're optimistic. There's plenty of money to go around, and everybody's happy at the end of the deal. Bankruptcies, by definition, nobody's really happy at the end of the process because you're starting from the basis of there's not enough to go around. And so you're starting with some very hard realities. And it's not fun per se. It's incredibly rewarding. If you can take a company that's got 120 employees and at the end of it have the company survive and it may have 100 employees instead of 120, but if you've saved 100 jobs and you've saved a Connecticut employer and there are going to be more jobs the following year, hopefully the world's a better place for it. And so it's rewarding, but it's difficult work.
Does the state or federal government get involved and help out?
Or usually not. And frankly, it's one place where I don't think the federal government or the state government need to get involved or should get
good,
involved.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
In most cases, there are ways in which state and federal law gets involved that is helpful. For example, the bankruptcy code itself creates a priority for consumer deposits, which is a good thing. Mm-hmm. If a furniture store is going to go and shut down, you know, Mr. Smith has given a deposit to buy a bedroom set, they ought to get their money back if they don't get the bedroom set. So there's a state, there's a federal priority system within the bankruptcy code. But the state has an interest in it. And so we see, for example, when we've restructured furniture stores, you know, outdoor patio furniture stores, the Attorney General's office will get involved to monitor the case to protect the interest of the consumer deposits, which I think is a good thing.
Yeah. Folks, you are listening to Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions Radio Show. I'm Gary Byron, joined as always with Steve Glick, Administrator for Chamber Insurance Trust. We are talking with Miles Alderman, Attorney Miles Alderman. Does healthcare insurance present a challenge to your firm or any, even any of your clients for that matter?
Yes and yes.
Oh, okay.
Insurance, I think insurance is a major concern for many employers as it is for employees and individuals. As most of us know, the cost of insurance has gone up significantly over the past few decades. When we started our law firm in 1992. Before that, my wife and I had each practice at two large firms in Connecticut, which meant we had the luxury of being W-2 employees and getting insurance provided for us. Mm-hmm. When we started our own firm in 92, we provided health insurance for ourselves and our employees, but we were a small shop, and frankly, health insurance back then was a relatively small cost. It was small compared to payroll, it was small compared to rent, and it was small compared to most other expenses of our business. We've watched it increase as a percentage of costs almost every year. And our clients have been watching it increase. And for us as lawyers in Connecticut, it's one of those things that is frustrating that it's as expensive as it is. It's necessary. But we see for our clients, it makes a big difference who the client is. Folks in the restaurant business, some owners feel pressure to provide health insurance for their employees, some don't. But our clients that are in manufacturing, our clients that deal with international competition, we've been hearing for years about the disparity that they're competing with companies outside the United States who don't have to buy health insurance.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
And if you're trying to make something in Connecticut, you know, people talk about the cost of labor, the cost of electricity. Insurance is a cost. And if we've got a client that's making something and there's a similar product made in Canada and the Canadian manufacturer is not paying for health insurance, they may have higher taxes, but they may have lower health care costs. Our clients see that as a competition problem.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would be a competition problem, wouldn't it?
I think it is. And it leads to some really interesting conversations because, you know, when insurance was cheap, we didn't think about it. And because it was relatively cheap, most businesses looked at it as, I really like having the ability to buy the employer plan I want from whichever company I buy it from. And, freedom of choice is a really good thing. When they start seeing a Canadian competitor not having to build in the cost of insurance, they start saying things that seemed unthinkable 20 years ago, like, man, I wish the government gave everybody insurance or made everybody get insurance so that we could have a level playing field. And, you know, that was an unthinkable thought for most business owners 20
sure.
years ago.
No, you're right. I was in business 20 years ago. I had a business for 30 years. I started myself in the late 80s and just sold my business almost 2 years ago. And I remember those times when I didn't have insurance and it was just me. And then when I grew my business to having part-time and then full-time employees, it's so challenging. All the more reason why Chamber Insurance Company and Flashpoint is so, so significant. In about a minute or less, can you just talk about your relationship with Steve Glick and Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions?
Sure. I've known Steve probably more years than he and I want to acknowledge. my guess is that Steve probably worked with my dad when he was president of New Haven Chamber of Commerce before I was doing the legal work I'm doing in Hartford. We've at Alderman and Alderman used Steve for advice and assistance for, you know, as long as I can remember. I think he is brilliant at what he does.
He is indeed.
You know, and I think he's done a lot, not just, you know, lots of professionals do a lot for their clients. I think Steve's done more than just for his clients. I think, for example, you know, what he's done to help move the needle on, for example, the HSA account.
Yeah.
You know, that benefited everybody. And, you know, to me, that there's really something to be said for those who not only benefit their own clients directly, but benefit all of us in the broader community.
I agree. And the more I spend with him, more time I spend with him every Saturday morning, the more I learn some wonderful things about him. Attorney Miles Alderman, you can check out his website simply at alderman.com. Once again, alderman.com. He's also the author of the book Chapter 11, Business Reorganizations for Business Leaders, Accountants, and Lawyers, and the Bankruptcy Law Chapter of the Connecticut Lawyer's Desk Book, published by the Connecticut Bar Association. His explanations of the bankruptcy process have appeared in a wide range of publications, including the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. Really appreciate your time with us this morning, Attorney Miles Alderman. Again, you can check him out at alderman.com. Turning back on to Steve Glick, very nice things that Miles said about you.
I personally want to thank him. He's a real great person, and he's a real great fighter for the right things that people need. Thank you, Miles, for the kind words. But again, we're reaching a new plateau, another new direction, as I mentioned to many of you, that we're going to be looking at new ways of funding health insurance.
Yeah.
The biggest element is looking at FICA taxation and allowing some of that money to be transferred to help pay premium. There are some very important creative ideas that will take some of the pressure off some of the employers and free money from FICA and free money for disposable income for that employee. Watch in 2000 and on. That what we're doing
in 2021. I mean, those changes, yeah, you say are they're actually occurring now. These new,
yes,
changes are occurring present day.
Yeah, and that's all part of our Flashpoint process. It's not just looking at the traditional health plan, but looking at the company itself and adding that value proposition to the point, and then the numbers, adding the numbers together, could make affordability of health coverage.
That's exciting.
It is.
And it's a really exciting time to be in insurance and looking into restructuring. We'll talk about restructuring businesses, restructuring your insurance. All the more reason to inquire with your Chamber of Commerce and make sure that they have Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions. I want to thank our guest for today, Attorney Miles Alderman. Again, alderman.com. He gave some great answers regarding Chapter 11, business reorganization and protection. Great shows we have coming up in the future, by the way. We're only scratching the surface. I want to make sure that everybody has the Chamber Insurance Trust website. It's very easy. It's www.citrust.com. Again, it's CITRUST.com. Also, the toll-free number. You can get a hold of Steve Glick with Chamber Insurance Trust at 800-953-4467. Once again, toll-free, 800-953-4467. For Steve Glick with Chamber Insurance Trust, I'm Gary Byron. Thank you so much for tuning in this morning to Flashpoint Healthcare Solutions Radio Show. Until next Saturday, have a good one, everybody. So long.